real too.
We were driven back then by the Chinese people's volunteers from Pyongyang down to just north of Kaesong, just to butt in on the conversation there. I did happen to take a 1500 weight down to the Yankee depot at Pyongyang, and there there were Americans were destroying all their equipment and that, and I managed to get a bale of American greatcoats, those raincoat things. Cigarettes, thousands of cigarettes I got, chewing tobacco, all sorts of different things out of this dump, and took them back to the troop at the battery I was in. And I was then the blue-eyed boy. All the officers were after me for these raincoats, but they'd had it because I went to the lads who were reservists who I served within the 39-46 campaign.
So the Americans were just about to destroy all this stuff?
They didn't bother destroying, they just dumped, they buggered off with the tails between the legs, and anybody who wanted to go into them dumps could get it. It was left for the anybody on the scrounge, or possibly then it would be the Korean civilians who went in, or even the Chinese. It was never burnt. It may have been after I went, but I left there, but I was one of the last to leave there, this dump. And we went down then to, as I say, just north of Kaesong. Kaesong. And it was nearly Christmas, and this Captain Matthews had been out somewhere, and he came back. I was asleep in the back of this 1500 weight, bitterly cold in those days. And Matthews woke me up to make his bed. Well, you can imagine what I said to Matthews at 2 o'clock in the morning on a night like that. All he had to do, he had a valise, he only had to undo a strap, unroll it, and his bed were there made. So I gave him a right bloody going over that night, and the following morning I said to him, "You can take me off this job, I've finished Batman." Well, he says, "What can you do?" I says, "I'm not bothered what I do." I says, "I've finished doing your Batman's job. You're not waking me up at 2 o'clock in the morning again." So I was a real dog's body then. I was just helping the cook in this slit trench. But Christmas Eve night, regiment headquarters were very near where I was, so I went down to Howe Troop, which was named after Major Howe, and it was all the observation post tanks of the 45th Field Regiment was in this one troop, and there were Cromwell tanks with 75mm gun, 19 wireless sets, and reason I went there was most of the men who were recalled with me, who had been in 33rd Field Regiment, all were posted to that tank troop because they were either tank drivers or driver operators. And I was talking to Johnny Fairest about reminiscing about the 39-46 war when we'd been together in 33rd Field Regiment all the years, and talking about different blokes and action and stuff like that, and I left to go, and I didn't know the officer off called, Captain, come to me in a minute. Anyway, this captain was stood behind me, and after I left and went back to where I was sleeping in the troop, he asked Johnny Ferris who I were, and Ferris told him. So this captain came to me the next morning, and his wireless operator was in hospital. He had a wireless operator. He said, "Would you like to come on my tank as wireless operator?" Well, I was fed up and browned off. I said, "Yes, sir." So I said, "I am just a wireless set, you know, since 1942 or 3. But, oh, he says, "You'll soon pick it up," which I did. I picked it up inside an hour again. Because once you'd been on them, you didn't forget such things. And so I joined this troop, and the tank was called Elsa Poppin. Captain Gibbons, that was his name. There were Scousmore, were they gonna bombardier more? Were they gunning in the turret? And I forgot the driver's name, sadly to say, or the assistant driver, the co-driver, I forgot his name. Because, as I say, it was New Year's, Christmas Eve rather, and I joined them either Christmas Day or Boxing Day of 1950, and I was in the bag on the night of January 3rd and 4th, 51.
We'll come on to the capture in a minute, yeah. But can I ask you about the American advance northwards towards the Yalu River? How did the Americans conduct that advance?
Well, you see, we followed up behind them. I don't know. Can't tell you that at all. They went before we ever got up there. I should imagine they'd be up, what is it, November, back end of November, wasn't it, when they went up? I can't really say anything about that because I don't really know. Only what I've read in the books after, and I mean, I don't know.
What was the advance like for you then, in your unit?
Oh, it was a bit rough because of snow and ice and that on the ground. It was terrible weather, you know. And the equipment that they'd given us was really absolute rubbish, what the British were equipped with for that Korean winter. The boots, what we had issued, they were leather with steel, what they call them?
Studs.
Mountaineering boots, and we took their steel things off. Well, they were no good. They ought to have known that from the German war in Moscow, first winter of the Moscow war, that leather boots with steel studs and that were no good in frost and snow.
Why not?
Well, they wouldn't protect you from the frostbite. That's what they all they say that won that bet the Germans, don't they? Well, the winter in Russia, actually, that was a load of cock, I think, myself.
What type of boots do you think you should have had?
Like those what the Ruski man had, or the Yanks had, the rubber over boots over their ordinary boots. But I was lucky, as I say, because I had these jump boots. These American jump boots.
In what other ways was your clothing inadequate for the winter?
Well, in them, I never had a jerkin. The jerkins, I think, came on after. And I was very, very lucky that when I joined the tank, I got a tank suit. Because that was, I think, one thing what helped to save most of the lads' lives who were in the tanks, well, when we were captured by the tank suit. The string vest, I can't say much about the string vest. Or the pullovers weren't big or thick enough.
What was this tank suit, like an overall, you mean?
Yeah, the full complete overall. With zips, you had two zips running right up. And when you unzipped them, the zip from top of your shoulders right down to your ankles, the full length of the suit, and then you could open them out and use them as a blanket. Very good things were those.
What kind of material were they made out of?
Well, they were like blanket material inside, and then they were a waterproof, like a donar coat outside.
So
they were waterproof.
They were woolen inside, were they?
Like woolly, like a blanket affair.
How far north did you get before you started to retreat, personally?
Oh, it was topside of Pyongyang. But not very far top. See, this is where I get mixed up with the train journey with the advance party. Before, did I go to the Pyongyang as well? Because I know we went past Seoul and we came back. So, and as I say, we were never in a place on that train journey. It took about 4 days on that journey to where we were going. And you didn't take everything in, what was going off.
Was there any difference between North Korea and South Korea from what you could observe?
No, no.
Did it look like it?
It seemed to be a bit more mountainous. See, we're on the rail going up, but the roads when I did get on the roads eventually, and I should imagine they were the same, I only ever saw one tarmac road, and that was between Incheon and Seoul. And I was with the advance party then when I saw that road. So we moved around a bit with this advance party. We didn't really go to one place and stop there. We were looking for places for the regiment to be billeted in, and possibly the infantry were looking for somewhere to billet their men. The only thing what you can remember, like, for instance, when we got on the train at Busan to go north, there were South Korean swaddies on as well with rifles and ammunition. And they were just firing live ammunition out the carriage windows at anything on each side. And the sergeant who holds the rifles took a rifle off one of these South Koreans and wouldn't give him it back. He was shooting at civilians, and there were no war there. Just banging away anywhere.
Was this in South Korea or North Korea?
South Korea, in their own place. And then another instance what I did see where I got into trouble actually about. It was Seoul Station. Those Yankee, is it what they call six-wheelers, big trucks, what the Negroes used to drive. Two big white Yanks were dragging wounded off the back of this wagon, and they'd be four feet at least, just pulling these civilians off onto the floor. And there were civilians, whether civilians or not, but they were dressed in white, the civilian rig out. They weren't in a uniform at all. Men. They were men. And I admonished one of these youngs. I said, that's not where to treat anybody. He says, you want to see what they've done to our blokes? But how did he know? He was a military policeman, never probably been up front to see. He'd listened to rumours what were about this time, that they weren't taking any prisoners at all, weren't the Chinese? Well, all the North Koreans weren't taking any prisoners at all. They were shooting everybody. That was a rumour, you see. So naturally, we were all frightened of being captured. We didn't know what were happening. But the propaganda what were given out were that they were ill-treating and shooting, weren't taking any prisoners.
Were these civilians wounded, screaming out when they were being drowned?
Oh, aye. They had been shot up somewhere, where, I don't know. Also, after the brigade came and we were in action, we had a notice, a brigade order, that if we saw any South Korean troops taking civilians off the main MSR and into the paddies or into the woods at the side of the road, we had to stop them, because they were simply shooting civilians, irrespective of whether they were northern or southern refugees.
Why were they doing that, do you know?
Because I've since read that all South Korea was a police state, where the one policeman from every 25 civilians, and Syngman Rhee was just a dictator. And according to one book up there, what I have, some Englishmen of 29th Brigade wondered, even in them days, whether they were fighting on the right side or not.
Did you see any other mistreatment of civilians?
Ill-treatment of civilians?
Yes.
Apart from the bombing. No, that was only one I saw.
How many of these wounded civilians were the Americans taking out of this war?
There's some jumped out a lot, and there'd be about half a dozen left who couldn't get out of their own by themselves.
What did the Americans do with them exactly?
Well, where they went to, I don't know.
No,
they just dragged them away.
How did they get them out of the lorry?
They pulled the mountains up to the floor. One or two of them jumped in the lorry, pulled them to end and just tipped them over end. Then another couple picked them up, and they told the other civilians to pick them up and dragged them away somewhere. I don't know where they took them. But I was played out with for interfering. from the officers.
From whose officers? The British officers?
Yes. Blokes of the advance party officers, whether they may have been also riflesmen, says none of your business, keep out of it.
Did you come across any guerrilla warfare against the American troops or British troops?
No, but from all accounts, that I don't think there were any guerrilla warfare up to me being captured. There may have been parties isolated on the hills what we're trying to get back, but I don't think they came, and I never experienced any, so I don't know, I can't say.
So you said that these rumours went round that the Chinese were advancing on shaggy horses.
Ah, 50,000 shaggy ponies.
Did people really believe it?
Well, I didn't know what to believe in a way, did you? In a case like that. But it's what true enough anyway, because we experienced it after we were prisoner.
How was the retreat from the Chinese conducted?
Oh, by whom? Everybody. They ran with their tails between their legs, like hell down that MSR did the Americans. The people to talk to about that is the Turkish brigade. They were left right in the cart with the Yanks. The Turks, who were prisoner of war in the same camp as we were captured in that November, hated the sight of the Americans.
Why was that?
Because they left them in the lurch. They just ran away, did the Americans, and left the Turks in the line, like they did with us. In that valley, where they left the Ulsters.
So the British and the Turks had to be a rear guard, did they?
If you call it a rear guard. Do you want to come on to that now?
Yes.
Well, I can't really say what the Turks were left in, but our own experience with the Ulster Rifles. They were in this valley just north of Kaesong. I've forgotten the name. It's in that book up there. The proper name, give you it after if you want. And they left in there a battalion, which was 1st Battalion of the Royal Ulster Rifles, out troop of 45th Field Regiment, which were all the tanks. A troop of 4.5 mortars of Royal Artillery in this valley. And to get into this valley, the route we went in, there was a sheer drop to us right, and the cliffs went up to us left, and in places Captain Gibbons had to get out the tank and guide the driver down the track. And they expected us to get up that track when we retreated. From the valley over to the left, you could see the lights in the dark of the column going down south of the Americans. Headlights, head to tail the vehicles seemed to be. But the morning before they retreated, we took the tanks to a place and we did shell an advance party of the Chinese and caused some casualties, because they brought a wounded Chinese who died later into the battalion area. We fired about 20 rounds, I should imagine, out of the gun, and I never loaded one of them guns afoot in all my life, and I'd be frightened at first of getting my fingers in the breech and stuff like that. Anyway, we didn't do too bad. He said we did all right, the Gibbons, so that were it. And then, as it was growing dusk on that night of January 3rd, they withdrew A, B, C and D companies, which were the fighting companies of the 1st Battalion Ulsters, left support company and out troop, and this 4.5 mortars there for rear guard. Well, the tank's absolutely useless in the dark on its own, I'd never be frightened of fighting any bloody tank, even today with all the new fangled ideas in the dark. Because if the commander puts his head out of the top to say, you can plonk him one, or they must have been running alongside of us as we were retreating.
Who?
The Chinese. The Chinese captured us, not the North Koreans. Well, anyway, we went down through the village and up this road which we came into the village when we were retreating. But it already blocked halfway up the road. And as luck would have it, there were a tank at front of us. Either he'd been knocked out, I think myself, it bellied on the side of the edge. And we couldn't get past. But just below where we passed, there was like a culvert, and a British tank would turn on its own axis. So the driver were able to swing him round, and we went back down this track to get back into the valley, because Captain Gibbons said there was another way out through some railway tunnels on the railway lines. But as we were going down, we had this, I think it, myself, it was a charge of grenades, what they threw up front of the tank and blinded the driver, and he bellied on the side of the track. And one track were up in the air spinning round where we were at it. So we bailed out and we were there with a chinky. Suddenly we got out. Now the driver and co-driver never did get out. We never saw them again. And they were presumed killed there. But Captain Gibbons, myself and Scousmore bailed out of the turret straight into the arms of the Chinese.
This was near Kaesong, did you say?
Just north of Kaesong, yeah.
How did the Chinese treat you?
Well, they never said anything at all. I literally just pushed about a bit and they took us away on the upside of a hill. And Captain Gibbons asked me to get his pips off his shoulder because we all thought we'd be going to be shot. And more so him being an officer. So I did take him off and threw him away. And then, before it got light, they moved us then off this hillside into some huts, wood houses, well, they're only mud huts. And we hadn't had anything to eat. And then that night, we asked if we could go back to the tanks. The Chinks would allow so many to go back to get provisions off the tanks, food and cigs or whatever. Well, Gibbons says, yes. He says, you go with them. He says, but do not move the tanks, which we did. We went back there and we got sleeping bags, cigarettes, food, whatever we could find. About 20 of us went back. And they had a jeep that captured a jeep of the Chinks. And that went alongside of us to put this stuff in the trailer. And the two wounded Chinese also in the trailer. And we brought them back to where we were. And we gave out. And the sleeping bags were in two parts, your inner and outer. And I gave a bloke called Johnny Kerr, who were in the Ulster Rifles, one half of mine. I had the other half. And I think that helped to save us as well, being wrapped up in them because they were quilted. That was one good thing the British did have, them quilted sleeping bags.
What did the Chinese do with you then?
Well, they made us stop undercover. They took us out before it got light in the morning. They gave us whatever they were. There were no rice, it was millet and stuff like that. Or bits of, what they call it, turnip or something similar to that. Then they moved us up on the hillside into like some dugout things what were camouflaged over. And we stayed there all day till it was getting dusk. And then they moved us back and gave us a meal then on the night. And we'd be there about 5 days till we started back north.
When you first came face to face with the Chinese troops, were they what you had expected?
No. This bloke got out of me, he didn't just search me. He took me jackknife. That's all he took off me. You know, the army jackknife. And then they just pushed us, an abba abba sort of thing, up into a group on this hillside. And we stood. I know I wanted to urinate, and I got up to stand up, and there were a chinky there with a rifle, a big old-fashioned rifle, and he went, more or less stopped still. So I laid there. We're all made to lay down. I had to urinate, and so I laid down. Most of it went down my pants.
So in what way were they different from what you'd expected?
Well, they didn't bully or anything like that. In that, we expected to be shot with the rumours that we'd be shot, which we weren't. And the first interrogation would be about a couple of nights after we were taken to this here dugout, and there were three Chinese in it. And they had, funny enough, one of them could speak pretty decent English. He says to me, where do you think you were going? I said, I don't know where we're going. He says, that's where you thought you were going. And he had a Soldier magazine. And at the back of the magazine was a map of Japan and a map of all Korea and parts of Manchuria. And there was big red arrows going from Japan all the way through South North Korea and branching out into Manchuria, Peking, one on the left, and one straight ahead and one to the right. He says, that's where you thought you were going, and he's pointing to Peking. But he says, you haven't got so far, have you, more or less, what's to that effect?
Was it true? Had you expected that?
No, I didn't know where we were going.
Was this the British Soldier magazine?
Yeah.
Published officially for the
army. Oh, yes, yeah. You didn't get it in Japan in them days, but he had one, they must have catched it. Probably from 27th Brigade, who were there before, 29th. But he also asked me the colonel's name. I had no idea. I couldn't have told him. If he'd have said to me, look, we'll let you go now back to your own lines if you'll tell us your colonel's name. And I couldn't have told him the colonel's name if he'd offered me my freedom. Because I had no interest in the blooming colonel's name.
Did you give them any other information apart from name and number?
No, they didn't ask. They never asked, only that. They knew we were from 45th Field Regiment, artillerymen.
What about their equipment, the Chinese equipment?
Well, we didn't see a great deal of it, you see, because it was night time. We didn't see them much during the day, because we were up in that hill and down in this dugout, which was camouflaged. They were there somewhere, but we never saw them. The only rifles I saw were old-fashioned type, where some Koreans too were guarding us, North Koreans or South Koreans, whoever, whatever they were. Were there also, but majority were Chinese who took us.
How could you tell the difference between a North Korean and a Chinese?
With the hats. The woolly hats on, winter hats.
Who had?
The Chinks, the Chinese.
Well, what did the Koreans, Koreans have?
Well, they were. They also had the red star, no, the end. The marks on the hats, what had the five-star mark on.